Garment Workers Union Campaign Committee, David Dubinsky, Chairman, on behalf of Truman and Barclay.
Oh, Mr. Dewey, dear Mr. Dewey.
Yes?
I'm the voter who elects the president.
Oh.
But before I cast my vote, I would like to hear your quote on exactly who and what you represent.
Oh, Mr. Voter, kind Mr. Voter, I insist I represent the working men.
How's about the NAM?
Well, my backing comes from them.
That's dishonest, Mr. Dewey.
Merely politics, my friend.
This is the story of what the Republican 80th Congress and the National Association of Manufacturers have done to bring on inflation and set back the cause of liberal government in the United States. The second in a series of four coast-to-coast broadcasts presented by the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, organized in 1900. Tonight, and at the same time for the next two Thursday nights, you'll hear Ronald Reagan, Melvin Douglas, Cholula Bankhead, and Pat O'Brien from Hollywood and Broadway. Also, Mayor Humphrey of Minneapolis, Senator Barclay, and President Truman. And later, more of Serenade to a Presidential Candidate by Jack Lawrence and Arnold Stang. But now to Ronald Reagan in Hollywood.
This is Ronald Reagan speaking to you from Hollywood. You know me as a motion picture actor. But tonight I'm just a citizen, pretty concerned about the national election next month, and more than a little impatient with those promises the Republicans made before they got control of Congress a couple of years ago. I remember listening to the radio on election night in 1946. Joseph Martin, the Republican Speaker of the House, said very solemnly, and I quote, "We Republicans intend to work for a real increase in income for everybody by encouraging more production and lower prices without impairing wages or working conditions," unquote. Remember that promise, a real increase in income for everybody. But what actually happened? The profits of corporations have doubled, while workers' wages have increased by only one quarter. In other words, profits have gone up four times as much as wages. And the small increase workers did receive was more than eaten up by rising prices, which have also bored into their savings. For example, here's an Associated Press dispatch I read the other day about Smith L. Carpenter, a craftsman in Union Springs, New York. Seems that Mr. Carpenter retired some years ago, thinking he had enough money saved up so that he could live out his last years without having to worry. But he didn't figure on this Republican inflation, which ate up all his savings, and so he's gone back to work. The reason this is news is Mr. Carpenter is 91 years old. Now, take as a contrast the Standard Oil Company of New Jersey, which reported a net profit of $210 million after taxes for the first half of 1948. An increase of 70% in 1 year. In other words, high prices have not been caused by higher wages, but by bigger and bigger profits. The Republican promises sounded pretty good in 1946, but what has happened since then, since the 80th Congress took over? Prices have climbed to the highest level in history, although the death of the OPA was supposed to bring prices down through, quote, the natural process of free competition, unquote. Labor has been handcuffed by the vicious Taft-Hartley law. Social Security benefits have been snatched away from almost 1 million workers by the Gearhart bill. Fair employment practices, which had worked so well during wartime, have been abandoned. Veterans' pleas for low-cost homes have been ignored, and many people are still living in made-over chicken coops and garages. Tax reduction bills have been passed to benefit the higher income brackets alone. The average worker saved only $1.73 a week. In the false name of economy, millions of children have been deprived of milk once provided through the federal school lunch program. This was the payoff of the Republicans' promises. And this is why we must have new faces in the Congress of the United States, Democratic faces. This is why we must elect not only President Truman, but also men like Mayor Hubert Humphrey of Minneapolis, the Democratic candidate for senator from Minnesota. Mayor Humphrey, of 37, is one of the ablest men in public life. He's running against Joe Ball, who is a member of the Senate Labor Committee, helped write the Taft-Hartley law. The Republicans don't want to lose Ball, and they're spending a small fortune on his campaign. They've even sent Dewey and Warren out to Minneapolis to speak for him. President Truman knows the value of a man like Hubert Humphrey in the Senate, and he has been in Minneapolis, too, campaigning against Joe Ball. Mayor Humphrey and Ball are the symbols of the political battle going on in America today. While Ball is the banner carrier for Wall Street, Mayor Humphrey is fighting for all the principles advocated by President Truman, for adequate low-cost housing, for civil rights, for prices people can afford to pay, and for a labor movement freed of the Taft-Hartley law.
Listen next week for the third program in this Coast to Coast series presented by the International Ladies Garment Workers Union Campaign Committee, when you will hear President Harry S. Truman from Washington and Tallulah Bankhead from New York.
Well, you were listening to a 1948 speech on a radio program that was sponsored by the then International Ladies Garment Workers Union.
Coast to Coast.
And that was Ronald Reagan, yeah, as head of the Screen Actors Guild. And now we have with us Henry Fona, the past president of the Fur and Leather Workers Union and a labor activist and historian. Henry, what in the world do you make? How are we supposed to understand?
I'm Polack. It occurs to me that what should have happened in 1980 is that we should have had a clip of that speech and followed Reagan around wherever he campaigned and play that speech to him.
There go the Standard Oil campaign, yeah, contributions.
Wow. You know, the gall, you know, that 1948 was a year after Taft-Hartley was passed. Taft-Hartley was passed in 47 after a year of 46 when there was, not really remembered now, but there were 7 general strikes in the United States, and that was the major reason that the NAM and big business decided that it was time that they had to get a bill through like Taft-Hartley. One of the first things that it did was eliminate any possibility of solidarity by eliminating what they called the secondary boycott. And then, of course, what else the Taft-Hartley law did? Well, of course, they also made it possible to have the so-called right-to-work laws, which meant, of course, that in a number of states you cannot sign a union shop contract, and that's still on the books, and the Taft-Hartley law is still on the books. So it occurred to me that what we should have done in 1980 is had a truth squad following Reagan around and playing this thing and making him listen to it and swallow it, because everything he did thereafter was in absolute contrast to what he was talking about in that speech.
Not to make Ronald Reagan too much of a saint back then, didn't he cooperate with the Red Scare? And
That's right. That's another great contribution he made to progress in the labor movement. He cooperated with the Red Scare in naming people, but he didn't do it publicly. He did it in private session so that, I guess, he didn't want to have the reputation of being an informer. But, of course, it's generally known that he did that. That period of red baiting and the Red Scare of that period played a role in the weakening of the labor movement as well, so that not only did you have the passage of Taft-Hartley, but you had the split and the decision of the CIO leadership to expel 11 of the most progressive unions. That really was really the beginning of the downslide of the labor movement. And then, of course, our friend Reagan put the final touches when he really literally destroyed PATCO, the
Air Traffic Controllers Union,
and introduced the notion that was picked up gladly by the employers throughout the country of bringing in replacement workers when people went on strike. You have to realize that before PATCO, no employers really used the technique of replacement workers to replace striking workers. It was after PATCO that big business and the NAM got the notion that this was a pretty goddamn good idea, and so, of course, they began to utilize it, and there hasn't been a major strike since then where employers have not tried to bring in replacement workers. And then, of course, if the replacement workers are in for a certain amount of time, they're able to vote and, in some cases, try to vote to eliminate the union.
Well, getting back to 1980 and the other Reagan, mm-hmm, however he transmorphed himself into that other role,
mm-hmm,
it wasn't just the attack on the labor movement. It was a whole redefinition of the role of government.
Absolutely, yes. And there isn't an area in the country, in the political firmament, that he didn't play a really destructive role. You know that as far as he was concerned, the struggle for civil rights, this is the man who spoke in this speech about the need for civil rights, and he literally turned his back on any effort at that time to bring about more equality, to bring about an end to racism and so on. So in that respect, and in respect, and he speaks in the speech about depriving children of milk, and he literally cut the allowances for children in the schools, the federally funded lunch programs. He cut them so that he literally did exactly what he was accusing the Republicans of having done in 1948. And then, of course, his characterization of people on welfare. You remember the disgusting thing that he did about the welfare queens, the people who were on welfare and were making unheard-of amounts of money, and really played this horrible role. Anything that had to do with workers, with the poor people, with blacks, with anything that had to do with the common people of the country, Reagan was on the side of the big business. And it is one of the tragedies of our era that none of this was really remembered when they paid all these tributes to him. Fortunately, there were some people who spoke up, but for the most part, everybody seemed to be bowing and scraping and talking about this great communicator.
Well, historic revisionism is never a pretty thing. It truly isn't. So, Henry Fonda, we'd like to thank you for helping set the record a little bit straighter as to the very backward, anti-worker, anti-class, except for the ruling class perspective of the Reagan administration. And thank you, as always, for joining Building Bridges. And we have been speaking with Henry Fonda, past president of the Fur and Leather Workers Union and currently co-historian of the Labor Arts website.
Oh, Mr. Voter. Kind Mr. Voter. I insist I represent the working men.
How's about the NAM?
Well, my backing comes from them.
That's dishonest, Mr. Dewey.
Merely politics, my friend.